The measure giving the service chiefs more power is part of the current Senate version of the 2016 defense bill, which the Senate Armed Services Committee voted to approve in closed session last Thursday. While the language of that bill still has not been released, the committee says the NDAA language would enhance the role of the members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the acquisition process and push more authority down from top Pentagon officials and into the military services. One of those top officials, Frank Kendall, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology, says he has serious questions about where the Senate's headed. On Tuesday, he told the Northern Virginia Technology Council that the service chiefs have plenty of ways to influence the acquisition decisions if they'd care to use them, and that weakening civilian oversight could have disastrous consequences for programs.
There's a perception, which I think is inaccurate, that they have been excluded somehow from acquisition. They have an enormously important role in acquisition. They set requirements, first of all. They define what the product's supposed to be able to do. They manage the personnel system. They generally control the budgets of their services. So all of those things have a huge impact on acquisition. Very important to have their counsel about the urgency of a need, because that has something to do with the amount of risk you're willing to take in a program. So I think they should be more engaged. I don't think they should be doing decisions about what kind of contract to use. I don't think they should be making judgments generally about what kind of risk mitigation to do to get to a certain product. I think those things should be left to acquisition people to do.
In comments to reporters last week, Arizona Senator John McCain suggested that his main objective in restoring some of the acquisition authority the chiefs lost as part of the 1986 Goldwater-Nichols Act was to prevent cost overruns by making them both responsible and accountable for their services decisions.
That means the service chiefs will be directly responsible for the acquisition process and any possible cost overruns that are associated. When there's a cost overrun on a weapons system, they have to certify in writing that they are aware of it and that they are acting to resolve it in one way or another.
Committee staffers say the legislation would decentralize acquisition decision-making authority to the military services to the maximum extent practicable and require the chiefs to sign binding performance agreements dealing with the budgets and requirements of their programs. That service-centric approach would suggest a decreased oversight role for Kendall's office and the rest of the Office of the Secretary of Defense. Kendall says that would be a mistake.
There are enormous pressures within a military department, within a service, to be optimistic. And every Department of Defense acquisition executive, everyone who's ever had my job, has had to push back against those pressures to some degree. We've had a lot of disasters in acquisition because people believed what they wanted to believe. They believed it could be faster and lower risk and cheaper, and they just put those assumptions into their plans and they headed for train wrecks. Now that can happen, even with the safety, if you will, the independent OSD oversight of acquisition. And we've had a few, but the odds of that happening go up, I think, pretty dramatically when you put that into the hands of service chiefs.
In fact, Kendall says it's happened fairly often, even in the post-Goldwater-Nichols era, when OSD was supposed to have been insisting on realistic cost and schedule projections from the military services before allowing programs to go forward. In a few high-profile cases, that oversight was missing or not rigorous enough, sometimes because of the personalities of the people holding various Pentagon offices.
And when we've had that situation, we've had some pretty big training. And two I can name off the top of my head are the A-12 program, which I was involved in years ago, and the Army's Future Combat System, where the Army wasted an enormous amount of money, incredibly overly ambitious in every respect, but also a dictated schedule that was totally unrealistic, forced the acquisition people to take a lot of risk, and structural program in a way was doomed from the start, I think. You know, that one was approved by OSD. It went through OSD, but it wasn't reviewed carefully enough. Another one more recently is what I termed acquisition malpractice a few years ago, which was the decision to start production of the F-35 before any real testing had been done. Kind of rule number one is fly before you buy, right? Make sure it's the design is stable before you start production. Once you start, you're committed. You're probably going to keep producing. That decision also had OSD review, but I think the odds of something like that not being allowed to happen, I think, are much stronger when there's a strong OSD voice a strong acquisition executive.
The House version of the defense bill, which lawmakers in that chamber granted final passage to last week, does not make changes to the service chief's role, but it would require them to draw up a report detailing the additional acquisition authorities they'd like to have and giving them a more explicit role in developing the acquisition workforce. Kendall says he sent a letter to Mac Thornberry, the committee's chairman, asking questions about where that committee is headed. On the whole, Kendall says the House Armed Services Committee has worked collaboratively with the Pentagon in an open process. The final product is mostly centered on removing what parties on both sides of the Potomac agree are unnecessary bureaucratic hurdles and documentation requirements in the acquisition process. But the final House bill also includes language Kendall is worried about. For example, it would require DOD to create a dual-track career path for uniformed members of the acquisition workforce, splitting their time between acquisition and working in the field. The objective is to make acquisition professionals more attuned to the on-the-ground realities of military operations, but Kendall says a tack that approaches a 50-50 split between those two worlds is problematic.
I think what you end up with that is someone who's not really proficient at either one. I think it's very important for acquisition people to have some time as an operator. I did it, and I think I benefited enormously from it. But I do think having some time in the field with soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, and understanding their environment, understanding their problems and how they deal with them, and the reality of their existence, essentially, is very, very helpful to acquisition people. So one or two tours, I think, is fine. Trying to do a 50-50, I think, is very, very difficult. If you had a choice between someone who'd always been a doctor and a doctor who'd spent half of his life as a lawyer, I think you'd generally go with the doctor who'd been a doctor all the time. And the same is probably true with a lawyer going the other way. These are both professions. Operations is a profession. Okay, acquisition is a profession, and there are different career fields in both. And I think people need to get into a track and become as good as they possibly can be at what they're doing.
The NDAA process is far from final. While the House has passed its bill, the Senate has yet to do so, and both committees will need to reconcile their differences before sending a final product to the president. And so far, both committees have taken overall funding approaches that have provoked the White House to threaten to veto the entire package. Both bills rely on the Pentagon's Overseas Contingency Operations account to sidestep federal budget caps in current law, but only for the Defense Department. There is no such workaround for the rest of the government.
They're essentially giving us close to what the president asked for, but they're doing it by putting an awful lot of money into tens of billions into what's called the Overseas Contingency Account. That's the money we're supposed to be using to fight the wars. It's sort of above the base budget. It's designed to go to be used very specifically for immediate operational requirements for the wars. So they're using that as a way to put a lot of things that ought to be in the base budget. That avoids sequestration for the defense accounts. It doesn't do anything for the rest of the things that are impacted by sequestration. And the president's made very clear that that's not something that he can accept. You know, we can't find a gimmick to raise defense up and ignore non-defense discretionary. There are a lot of things in the non-defense discretionary that are important to national security. Justice Department, for example, the State Department, for example, some of our intelligence activities. So we're in a process that will play out over the next several months, and I don't know where we'll end up. The department has been working under an enormous amount of uncertainty, which has made planning very, very difficult.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com, and 1500 AM.